You're listening to the Douglas Jacoby Podcast. Here we bring you some of the material found on Douglas's website in podcast form. We hope that as you listen, you are challenged to think about faith. Today, Douglas is continuing his series on Old Testament characters, now looking at the life of Jonathan. If you've enjoyed the podcast and are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we'd love if you could leave us a review in the podcast player you listen to. This helps to spread the word about the encouraging messages you're hearing. For more on this episode, follow the link in the show notes to Douglas's website. Now here's today's teaching.
Old Testament Premium Podcast number 29 on Jonathan. Last time we looked at King Saul, the first king of Israel, whom Samuel, the last of the judges, and also a prophet, appointed about the year 1050 BC. As we saw, Saul really blew it. He's been a king just a few days when he shows that he's not going to live in a worthy way. And as a result, Samuel tells him that you and your son and your grandson, basically, you will not lead Israel. Your dynasty is coming to an end, even though there's only one man in the line. In other words, Jonathan would have been the second king of Israel. Jonathan, or Yehonatan, which means the Lord is given, is, I think, one of the most likable figures in the Old Testament. Now, there are many Jonathans in the Bible, more than a dozen. So when you're studying later on, be careful not to confuse them. This man is courageous. He understands camaraderie. And as I said, I think he's likable. We can't really help but be drawn to him. He appears in 1 Samuel 13, verse 2, without an introduction. And here he attacks a Philistine outpost, showing he's a man of bravery. In chapter 14, he attacks another outpost. And afterwards, as we looked at last time, he's threatened with death by his own father, simply because he wasn't aware of one of his father's rules. Well, I'm in 14:1, and I'll read today from the New Living Translation. One day, Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go over to where the Philistines have their outpost." But Jonathan did not tell his father what he was doing. Then, to reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Seneh. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, the one on the south was in front of Geba. "Let's go across to the outpost of those pagans," Jonathan said to his armor bearer. "Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few." "Do what you think is best," the armor bearer replied. "I'm with you completely, whatever you decide." "All right then," Jonathan told him. "We will cross over and let them see us. If they say to us, 'Stay where you are, we'll kill you,' then we will stop and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come on up and fight,' then we will go up. That will be the Lord's sign that he will help us defeat them." When the Philistines saw them coming, they shouted, "Look, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes." Then the men from the outpost shouted to Jonathan, "Come on up here and we'll teach you a lesson." "Come on, climb right behind me," Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "for the Lord will help us defeat them." So they climbed up using both hands and feet. And the Philistines fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed those who came behind him. I'm focusing on this passage because I think it gives us a great glimpse into the character of this man. And he is a man of character. Though he's genetically related to King Saul as his son, he's not afflicted with the same mortal weaknesses we see in his father. Notice, he doesn't have the armor bearer go up first, as we might expect in an action comedy. "Let's go get him. Okay, you go first. After you." It's not like that. He goes up first, and he shows great courage in the face of danger. And yet, for all of that, as he had not coordinated plans with his father, he ends up being threatened with death by King Saul. Of course, the army says, "No way." His courage has led us all to a great victory. And really, that's in spite of your stupid rule. You can see that Saul's supporters are not really very supportive here. Well, another place, and we're only sampling a couple of passages in the story of Jonathan, is we're going to look in chapter 23 where he draws close to David. He's drawn to David's courage in chapter 18. Remember, one of the index chapters of the Bible, a chapter you should definitely know. You could pick maybe 20, 30, 40 chapters in the Bible just to memorize what's in the chapter. And that would be 1 Samuel 17, where David kills Goliath. A, it's famous, and B, it's kind of a pivotal point in this whole cycle. Because after this point, Saul becomes murderously jealous. But Jonathan is drawn to David, and they make a covenant in 18:3. As a result of that, in chapter 19, Jonathan warns David of Saul's murderous intentions. And then he reasons with his father, and for a short while, the Saul-David relationship is restored and normal. But things heat up again, chapter 20. Jonathan has difficulty believing his father would kill David, at least not without letting Jonathan know. David suspects better now. He's been burned more than once. And eventually, of course, Jonathan, to his great dismay, admits that his father is just not reasonable. He's not spiritual. So in chapter 23, when David is on the run from Saul, Jonathan goes to him and helps him find strength in God, and they make another covenant. So let's read 23:15 to 18. One day, near Horesh, David received the news that Saul was on the way to Ziph to search for him and kill him. Jonathan went to find David and encouraged him to stay strong in his faith in God. "Don't be afraid," Jonathan reassured him. "My father will never find you. You are going to be the king of Israel, and I will be next to you, as my father Saul is well aware." So the two of them renewed their solemn pact before the Lord. Then Jonathan returned home, while David stayed at Horesh. Well, here we see that Jonathan, who would have become the next king of Israel, is very happy for David to be that man. He sees the difference. It's clear to him that God's man is David, and he would have been the next king, and yet he's not demanding that position. He's stepping aside. Also, we see that he values relationship over position. He doesn't want to do anything to hurt his special friendship with David. And I'm very encouraged by this. I appreciate Jonathan's character. I wish we knew a little bit more about him. He actually does appear in a number of scenes. And in every scene, he emerges, well, perhaps naive at times, but affable, a person we would trust, we would want to be with. I do respect him. He's a courageous man. He understands camaraderie. Oh, and also Jonathan understood the need for encouragement. I think he knew he needed it, but he knew David needed it. And David was vulnerable and probably getting tired emotionally. And Jonathan is extending to him some concrete love. Jonathan was willing to be in a minority, as when he and his armor bearer climbed up to the Philistine outpost. And it says in the text we read in chapter 14 that his armor bearer was with him heart and soul. This means a lot to me. I feel like in my life, there have been some times I've been in the majority. There are a lot of times I have been and still am in the minority. And it's lonely. In a funny way, this reminds me of Matthew 18, where Jesus says, "If two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with them." Now, a church of one is not a church. A church of two or three is very small. When Jonathan goes up after the plan to confront the Philistines, he's in a phenomenal minority. It's just himself and his loyal assistant willing to be in the minority. I guess we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to do that? When we became Christians, we're signing up for something that automatically placed us in a very, very small minority of human beings on the planet. Are we still willing to do that? We're willing to do what's right and act courageously on impulse when the impulse is from God and it's good. We're willing to do that even when others are not willing. In this case, it was his own father who was showing cowardice, just as he did in chapter 17, where David stepped up to slay the giant. Jonathan knew that men need friendship, and not just worldly friends, people to play sports with or, confide in, but comrades in the cause with whom he can be real. I look at a lot of talks I've had with various men in my life at crucial times. sometimes at perilous times. Maybe on the telephone, I guess depends what country I was in. Other times in person where I've had to bare my soul. And sometimes the men have been my age, sometimes they've been much older. But it's so important. We need those advisors. Jonathan helps others to have perspective. He helps David have perspective. He's a faithful friend. And I relate to this because much of what this ministry, the teaching ministry, is about is helping people have perspective, whether they're confused or outnumbered or just unsure what to do. We need to find our strength in God, to stay strong in the faith in God. In Acts 14, Paul goes around to the churches and he strengthens the people. He confirms the young believers in their faith and he exhorts them and telling them we must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God. And he helps them with leadership, to appoint leadership. And it's that kind of ministry that I really feel is what I've devoted my life to. And so on these points, the willingness to be in the minority and knowing that men need friendship and they need support, it's on those points that I feel like I connect emotionally with Jonathan. Well, sadly, in chapter 31, in the battle on Mount Gilboa, Jonathan is killed along with his father and many others. And David weeps. David mourns. David fasts in 2 Samuel chapter 1. As we also know, later in 2 Samuel 9, he wants to extend kindness to Jonathan, to the family of Saul. And he does that by personally taking an interest in Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth. Now, that's something you can study as you continue on. I'd like to read part of the funeral lament, which David sang when Jonathan's death came to his ears. Your glory, O Israel. This is 2 Samuel 1:19-27. Your glory, O Israel, lies slain on your heights. How the mighty have fallen. Let me skip a few verses. Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and gracious, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. And then, how the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. How the mighty have fallen. Well, that's a very famous line, how the mighty have fallen. In this case, it refers to one who really deserved to fall, that was Saul, and to another who was in a very different category, and that's Jonathan. And notice the magnanimity of David. He has nothing bad to say about Saul. He has nothing bad to say at all. He just is filled with regret. He mourns and weeps and fasts. And he really misses Jonathan. He says, I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You see, he felt very close to him. They weren't from the same tribe. Jonathan was from the tribe of Benjamin. David's from Judah. But he really felt that he was a brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. And, of course, some people have tried to interpret this passage in a very perverse way to support some alternative lifestyle. That's certainly not what David's saying. That would go against multiple scriptures in Old and New Testament. But he's talking about the emotional bond these two had, that they both loved God. They both had a heart for God. And because of that, this was a really special relationship. And I think you understand the passage and you relate to that. There are certain people, you haven't seen them for months or even years, and yet there's a common understanding, and you don't really need a whole lot of small talk before you know your souls are knit together and you're on the same page, and there's so much to share. And so Jonathan's death is not only a loss for Israel, it's a great loss for David himself. And so those are my thoughts about Jonathan. As always in these podcasts, I like to end with looking at what we learn about God. And I only have two things that I would like to underline here. One, Jonathan was a man more worthy than his father to be king. Men of integrity and loyalty do not always end up in leadership. And in fact, sometimes they do not survive at all. And God permits this to happen. What I'm saying is that some people would make ideal leaders, and not because of some worldly qualities or because they're just natural leaders, but it's because of their heart. They're just great people. They're strong, men of integrity and character, but they don't always end up in leadership, and God permits that to happen. Second, God extends encouragement to us in times of trial through spiritual and like-minded brothers and sisters. Let me repeat that. When we're going through hard times, when we're in the desert, and this happened to me, I bet it's happened to many of you, God extends encouragement to us through spiritual and like-minded brothers and sisters. Next time, we'll be looking at, I guess we're going to look at the character of David. And so I hope you're getting a lot out of these podcasts. Warm greetings from Atlanta. God bless you all.
We hope you enjoyed Douglas's teaching on Jonathan. For additional notes and resources, be sure to check out Douglas's website in the show notes. The website has hundreds of articles, podcasts, and videos for you to access for free. You can also become a premium subscriber and gain access to thousands of online resources from Douglas's teaching ministry. Thanks again for listening.